Welcome
to the Love and Respect Podcast,
a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich. And we trust that all of you had a meaningful Thanksgiving, as you will be listening to this the day after Thanksgiving 2016. And some of you in the days to come, and then, you know, some of you hearing us, you know, a year from now, you know, 5 years from now. So that's the date when we're doing this, and we're doing a two-part series on the topic of Thanksgiving or gratefulness, and we'll jump into that in a second. But just wanted to remind all of you that as we near the holiday season, the Christmas season, and we're going to be putting together some bundles that we hopefully provide some good, easy choices for gifts for people, including, you know, what to give a couple, what to give a husband, you know, whether that's, you know, yours or somebody within your family, what to give a wife. That you know, and maybe even one kind of on parenting. So hopefully we can package some things that are provide some meaningful gift ideas for you in this season of giving. So grateful for those of you that continue to give back to us in the sense of telling others about the message and just spreading the word. I know I say this, you know, too often, but seriously, we couldn't do it without you, whether that's the iTunes reviews, the feedback on the podcast, the word of mouth, you know, the spread of just this podcast alone. I mean, we get countless, you know, somebody told me about it and I went and I listened to, you know, 30 episodes. I mean, we get those stories frequently. So thank you so much for that. And then Dad, I was just going to let you, you know, highlight as people think about the new year and what they, how they might interface, you know, with a live conference. We've actually got four of them coming up in the spring of 2016. So why don't you mention those?
Well, and before I do, your mom loves these mugs. The Love and Respect mugs. And this week we got our own, and she's been raving about those. And, you know, I mean, when mom likes something, you know, I have a hunch other people are going to like it as well. I mean, we've tried things before and she doesn't, you know, think that's good, and it really doesn't go. So she just has that sense. She loves it. So, you know, I don't know if others of you will, but we aren't trying to put out trinkets, but something that's meaningful. And it would be wonderful for you to consider that.
Well, she also just said somebody bought 12 of them to give to friends and family.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, so we're going to try different little things that we enjoy, and that's kind of going to be the criteria, you know, as we move forward on some of this. But we're going to be having some live conferences in 2017 in Texas, Austin, and then Conroy, we believe, is outside a little bit of Houston. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon. And we're going to be in Aurora, Colorado. So if you would let family and friends know about that, these are great destiny cities. It'll be during, you know, February-ish type thing, most of them. But we would invite you to come yourself. If you can't, please let maybe a son or daughter, or if you're grandparents, you know, fly them there as your gift. But we believe these live events, something most significant happens. And we would appreciate having you attend.
Absolutely. If you didn't get a chance to check out last week's episode, it was part two of a two-part series we did on parenting called Chronic Anger or Chronic Appeasement, and then added a third component there of apathy. And so just wanted to remind you, you can find those at loveandrespectpodcast.com, iTunes, the blog, the website, many other places. So be sure and go check that out. But let's begin our two-part series here, starting with episode 124, titled Saying Thanks versus being grateful. And I'll turn it over to you, Dad.
Yeah, I have reflected on myself as well as in parenting that, you know, I can say thank you to you, you know, but I'm not grateful. You know, we can mouth words, but our hearts are elsewhere. We're, you know, we can even, you know, say thank you, but we're really fixated on ourselves, you know, because I've been there. I mean, the Bible says in 2 Timothy 3:2 that people can be lovers of self, and then it goes on to talk about being ungrateful. And simply, you know, I can be so focused on myself that I'm ungrateful, even though I'm giving lip service. You know, I mean, we can sing a song of thanks while in a worship service at church. I mean, I was pastoring, you know, we would have worship songs of thanks, but I was thinking maybe about some decision that the board made that I wasn't happy with. So I'm using the hymn book, but my heart's, you know, a million miles away. You know, we can be thinking about somebody who offended us while we're giving thanks to the Lord, you know. We can be like parrots. In fact, Jonathan, read that about the little research I did on parrots that I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, not a line you hear too often. Read the little research I did on parrots, but I'm more than happy to to read. Though parrots do not have teeth or lips, they learn words, phrases, and songs. They have an extraordinary ability to imitate tones. With keen hearing and a complex voice box, they reproduce the sounds they hear. But that's all they do. They parrot. They have no comprehension of the meaning of those words. There is no heartfelt understanding when saying, thank you. The parrot is not grateful, but merely mimicking the words, even when singing Louis Armstrong's What a Wonderful World.
Now, I'm not sure that a parrot has ever sung Louis Armstrong's, you know, that deep, but I think we get the point. You know, I have to confess, and I think all of us do, that, you know, we can parrot. And, you know, a parent, for instance, not a parrot, but a parent, instructs an 8-year-old boy, say thanks for the ice cream and cake. And he obeys by repeating, thank you. But is his thank you sincere? And Jonathan, read about the immature child there, if you would.
As an immature child, he is less than grateful and more focused on his appetites. He selfishly zeroes in on the dessert to satisfy his sweet tooth. He says, thank you, to ensure he'll get his cake and ice cream. He isn't thinking how fortunate he is compared to the rest of the world that have no refrigeration to store ice cream and lack ovens to bake a cake.
Mm-hmm. Immature children, you know, are self-centered, and this controls their inner emotions. Gratitude, and here's the point, gratitude isn't natural. Gratitude must be learned. Eventually, such a child must take the focus off of himself and see the bigger picture. He must begin to appreciate his many blessings. Interestingly, the English writer Landor wrote in somewhere in the 1700s, early 1800s, we often fancy that we suffer from ingratitude, while in reality, we suffer from self-love. But that was very insightful. I mean, really, the deeper issue, and that's what Paul was referencing, lovers of self, ungrateful. And it really is a focus on the self. And what is fascinating is that the parent can command the boy to say thank you, but the parent cannot coerce the child into having a grateful heart. And this is what we teach in our parenting conference. I can only control my actions and reactions to my kids. I can't control those ultimate outcomes within them. You know, and I say I can force them to say thank you, but I can't force them to be grateful. That's an internal decision that the boy must make for himself as he matures. And eventually, he must turn from thinking only about his own appetites to an appreciation of others and of God, who has supplied his many needs and desires. But let's continue, Jonathan, reading there.
As with this boy, we can possess an ungrateful heart, though we possess what the rest of the world craves to own. Oh, sure, periodically we express, I am blessed and very thankful for all that I have, but we could very well be uttering these words while thinking about what we don't have and how to get it. This is why the song, Give Thanks with a Grateful Heart, is so potent. The words in the parentheses, which is with a grateful heart, which are part of the title, capture the distinction between giving thanks and giving thanks with a grateful heart. We can sing a song of thanks like a parrot, hitting all the right notes, but stand there without an attitude of gratitude. God can even command us to give thanks in 1 Thessalonians 5:18, but he won't coerce us. That's our choice based on our maturity.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fitting then on this Thanksgiving, you know, season, and this really applies to Thanksgiving, but it applies, you know, every day of our lives because we're commanded to give thanks every day. But we can say thanks, but not feel it or mean it. And Jonathan, kind of describe what might happen during the prayer of Thanksgiving as people have gathered around that table if they did give thanks.
On Thanksgiving Day, we can say thanks, but not feel it or mean it. During the prayer of thanksgiving, we can nod our heads in agreement and whisper loud enough, "Yes, Lord," so others can hear our deep spirituality, but truth be told, we primarily think of the gravy wafting its delicious aroma beneath our noses as we peek over at the dessert table to see if there will be enough of our favorite pie. Furthermore, we want Grandpa to hurry up his prayer since the food is getting cold. We can only give thanks so long. Don't go much over a minute, please.
Does that bring back any memories, Jonathan? Grandpa Choo Choo
brings back memories from last night's prayer over dinner. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we say these, you know, things that, you know, as we focus on the Thanksgiving season, but they're so perfunctory and routine, even praying over meals, right? I mean, I was probably, I mean, we went out to lunch after church yesterday, right? And five of us, and, you know, you said a prayer and you know, we were at P.F. Chang's, and I'm probably thinking about my, you know, my beef and broccoli as you gave thanks for the food. And so, you know, guilty as charged right here.
Yeah, well, and I was reminiscing about the fact that you always like Grandpa Choo Choo, who's now in heaven, to pray because he was finished in about 18 seconds, you know. And so I always remember you kids getting so excited about that. And Grandma used to talk about her older brother who used to say at mealtime, "Is that all there is? Then give me mine," you know. And the point is, at least he was honest, you know. Now, my question is everyone who says thank you hypocritical and grateful? Well, not at all. I mean, grateful people express thanks and should. The giving of thanks is vital. God commands it. However, we can be inauthentic. Both the grateful and the ungrateful say thanks. And I need to insert, some ungrateful people do not give thanks because they're remaining true to their bitter soul. At least they're honest, you know. And they're not going to celebrate Thanksgiving, for instance. But no truly grateful person can refrain from conveying thanks. Anyone who claims to be grateful but never says thank you is probably self-deluded. So now, here's the question. Okay, Emerson, how can we give thanks with a grateful heart? I mean, this is the critical thing, because I need to challenge myself with this, and I hope you will as well, because I really think that you can't be really a happy soul if there isn't gratefulness. I was thinking of it even today before we were doing the podcast. Can I really ever be a happy individual? I mean, kind of an undercurrent of happiness and joy if I'm an ungrateful individual. And I don't think so. I think this is extremely relevant, because I think even if we have a sense of self-interest, we should say to ourselves, you know, if I'm not really grateful, will I ever really be content or happy? I think I'd like to go on record and say it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Well, before you jump into this next part, and I think you did a little bit of this beginning, as we think about this being two parts and this being one part, you set the framework for kind of, you know, what you just described, what you're about to go over, and then what maybe people are going to get in the second episode. Are you able to do that, and even capturing it for me?
Yeah. Well, we're asking that critical question. We kind of build up to this, which is, you know, how can we give thanks with a grateful heart? Because I think we've made the case, hopefully persuasively so, that you can move your lips like a parrot but not have a grateful heart. And that gratefulness within is something that only we can make a decision to do. And so that raises that question, well, I do want a grateful heart, but I don't. How do I get that grateful heart? Well, it takes some practice, and we're going to come in and out of it based on life circumstances. We can be grateful, and then whammo, something happens. But we're going to look at two dimensions. I've got to focus on the tangibles and the intangibles and anything in between. But we're going to look at, hey, you know, we've got stuff, and how do I feel about this stuff? And then whether I have stuff or not, is this stuff, is this tangible stuff really foundational to being grateful? And we're going to make the point that as we get older and all the surveys that have been done, that people begin to realize you become grateful over the things that money can't buy. And men in particular, as they get older, begin to realize some things, and we'll highlight that in our second part on the intangibles. But we want to begin with the first one, and if you would read that first one, tangibles.
Number one, focus on the tangible things that we do have instead of fixating on what we do not have. Not to be trite, but this sage advice serves as a fitting reminder. And here's the advice. I complained about not having shoes until I saw a man without feet. We have heard this, but knowing it to be true and acting on this truth are not the same thing. All of us need the reminder to rejoice over having 2 feet instead of complaining that the high-heeled shoes don't perfectly match the new outfit. Mature, grateful people never lose sight of their feet. For that matter, they do not lose sight of the fact that they were invited to a special event where they will dance as a couple, have grandparents nearby to babysit the kids, have the money to enjoy a great meal, and will be served by people who could be single mothers who have no high heels.
Mm-hmm. Perspective. We're talking about bringing this perspective. And this is so important. You know, what do I have rather than what do I not have? And we know this. This isn't, you know, but I appreciate it. I was saying to a pastor the other day that 2 Peter, there's 1 Peter and 2 Peter. 2 Peter is written only by way of reminder. There's nothing new he is saying here. He said, I'm just writing you by way of reminder. Why? Because I don't know about you, but I can forget. And this is a worthy topic for us to say, you know what? We need a pause. I mean, 30 years ago, some of you, if you had then what you have now, you'd be tickled pink. Now you have what you didn't have 30 years ago, but you're not tickled pink. So why is this? And we each have to kind of, I think, recognize is perhaps because, you know, it's that whole idea that, you know, what did we know about that rich man? Well, he wanted to make $1 more. You know, there's always this new horizon, and some of that can be healthy. Some of it can be unhealthy because we don't stop long enough to smell the roses, so to speak. Continue, if you would, Jonathan.
Though God has blessed many of us with many tangible things, we won't be humbly appreciative if we view stuff as our birthright. People who develop grateful hearts review and rehearse the tangible blessings as undeserved gifts. They never see it as a Kingdom of God entitlement program. You and Mom are reminded often of James 1:17, which says, "Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights." You take the position that blessings like these come from God. Yes, we all may have worked very hard to earn the money to buy stuff, but He allowed us to have that ability to work in the first place. A brain surgeon should never take all the credit, but thank God from a grateful heart for allowing him to have parents who had high IQs and great eye and hand coordination, and for being born during an era where there were such things as brain surgeons. We must always go back from enough, far enough, to discover the first causes and give God and others credit, not solely ourselves. We must be grateful for the kindnesses and opportunities that came our way.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of the professional athletes. It's kind of like the polar opposites. You got these guys that say, I just thank God for the abilities He's given me. I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful for the opportunities. I'm grateful for parents who are there, my early games. I mean, they had that sense of gratefulness that expresses itself in thanks. And then you have others who are on the other extreme. I am where I am because of me. And yet B.J. Weber, the chaplain of the Yankees, used to say among many of the professional athletes, you're just one injury away from an ended career. You know, we mustn't be arrogant or presumptuous. There's so many things we can do. Any of us could have a stroke at any moment. There needs to be a humility. And I think most of you who are listening have that. But what a great reminder again. There's a first cause out there, and we aren't the first cause of that. Continue, if you would.
We must also remind ourselves of Job's wisdom. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord, Job 1:21. There will be no U-Haul behind our hearse. We can't take it with us. If life is like Monopoly, the game will soon end and we must put all the houses and hotels back in the box. Everything goes back in the box.
And this is not, again, to be morbid. I just have found, you know, and I've said to the kids, and through the years we stopped at cemeteries and looked at cemeteries, this is our end. And not to be morbid, but if you don't, I mean, we know in business, you start with the end in mind and then you work back from that. Our life should be the same way. We work from the end and work back and say, hey, you know, naked we came into this world, naked we're going to leave. And what we possess is temporary. And so what we have right now, those of us who have, and anybody in the Western Hemisphere basically is wealthy compared to many of the nations in other parts of the country, third world peoples and cultures, there should be something that we have about which we should have a deep gratefulness, not just giving lip service by saying thank you. But on that point mm-hmm. of strolling through a cemetery.
Yeah. Stroll through a cemetery every chance you get and look at all the dashes etched on the stone between the day of birth and the day of death, and remind yourself that life is really nothing more than a dash. Meditate on James 1, 10 and 11. The rich man is to glory in his humiliation, because like flowering grass he will pass away. For the sun rises with a scorching wind and withers the grass, and its flowers fall off, and the beauty of its appearance is destroyed. So too the rich man in the midst of his pursuits will fade away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we need to gain wisdom and gratefulness, because this is not going to last. And the arrogant person who is self-loving and just focused on self, I mean, in and of itself, as we pointed out, I don't think he can ever really be happy. So at least a person who's in the situation needs to stop long enough and realize, you know, this is not going to be permanent. You know, as Sarah and I visited recently a retirement center, calling on Leroy Dugan, our former neighbor, who is now 101 years old and he's bright as ever. We looked around at all those in the wheelchairs in the dining room and knew this would be similar in for mom and me. I mean, this is reality. We didn't gaze from melancholy or, you know, depression, but from humility. Being mindful of our end ignites gratefulness. And here's the point. Being mindful of our end ignites gratefulness in us for all that we have during this temporary age and stage. It is only a matter of time before it all changes. We will not get out of this world alive, apart from Christ coming back. For this reason, how can Sarah and I be ungrateful in our present condition? We have so much to deeply appreciate, and to do so because it will not last. And what others have that we don't, why be envious? Because they can't hang on to it. This is why some very rich people who have more money than they can spend in a lifetime become bitter. They know their life will end before their money does. Yeah, isn't that ironic? You know, but you see it. They cannot enjoy it forever, and they're mad about this. And that's why the thoughtful person who is extremely rich becomes philanthropic. The only alternative is philanthropy and also English classes, because that way you become a non-lover of self. I think of Bill Gates and others. They begin to focus in on how they can make a difference with their resources, and that's to be applauded. Mm-hmm. If you'd continue.
All of us must live with our end in mind. Many of us have been sobered by what Billy Graham remarked. He indicated that he was prepared to die, but he was not prepared to get old. An interesting question for each of us. Will we one day in our aged state prize what we possessed only after we have lost it, or can no longer enjoy it? Will we declare, how could I have had such a complaining and churlish attitude? How could I have been so ungrateful for my many blessings?
Continue if you would.
Getting a mature perspective and suppressing our narcissistic self-love is the key to becoming grateful. Right now, for instance, many of us possess tangible health, but in 30 years we may not. As a maturing soul, we must meditate on these kinds of realities and be grateful.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Perhaps an analogy can help us. Do you remember those times when you had the flu and were vomiting? Can you recall during the nausea thinking to yourself, oh, if I could only feel good again. I want this to stop, or let me die. Then the next day the nausea leaves and we are happy campers. As we lie in bed, we feel on top of the world. Nothing is sweeter than hot tea and toast. Life is good, very good indeed. At that moment, we are grateful for health. Yet how long does that gratefulness last?
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who, you know, do face, whether it's cancer or something before that, or in their 40s, 50s, I mean, and make it through it. I mean, I think they have a similar sentiment of the richness of life that comes. And if they handle it well, you hear a maturity about moving forward in life. Has that been your experience as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, I mean, talk about perspective or near-death experiences and people getting that wisdom, or people who have, you know, been in war, or, you know, there's just a maturity that comes through suffering or the realization of potential loss, and they step back and they reflect on this, and it's a potent thing. That's why the mature person works at storing these scenes and experiences in the memory bank, so that during a down moment, she says, but I have health, I have eyesight, I have 2 feet, I am not nauseated, I can enjoy tea and toast, I have high heels. Life is really quite good. On the other hand, the immature and ungrateful are horrible at math. By that I mean they don't apply the message they sing in that well-known song, Count Your Blessings, Name Them One by One.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus addresses this in part, Jonathan, if you would read that.
In Luke 17, we learn of the 10 lepers Jesus healed, a tangible blessing. With the healing, their condition radically changed for the better. However, only one returned to thank him for the healing. In Luke 17, 15, and 16, Jesus asks, were there not 10 cleansed? But the 9, where are they?
Continue, yes.
All who read the account are stunned at the human heart's ability to be ungrateful. But even more stunning is the percentage of the ungrateful. 9 out of 10 went their merry way. Jesus is not pulling this number out of a hat arbitrarily. Lucius Annaeus Seneca observed, to find one thankful man, I will oblige a great many that are not so.
Mm-hmm. And my question is, could it be that 90% of us are guilty of this vice? And I should insert, some actually see ungratefulness as a vice. Jonathan, read that French proverb.
The French have a proverb, gratitude is the least of virtues, ingratitude the worst of vices. As I have reflected on this, I see its truth. We should be grateful for the many blessings that have come our way. What virtue is there in that? In the case of the lepers, they were all healed. It makes perfect sense to express thanks for this gift from God. We would not describe those who give thanks for this tangible blessing as the ultimate example of virtue. They are doing what they should do. However, ingratitude at such a moment does prove to be the worst of vices. How can one neglect giving thanks for the undeserved blessings of God? To receive such a gift and say nothing and feel nothing and to go on one's way is wicked.
Mm-hmm. And in Luke 6:35, Jesus places the ungrateful alongside of evil men. If you look at Luke 6:35, it talks about our Heavenly Father is kind, both to the ungrateful and evil. He lumps ungratefulness into the category with evil. I hadn't seen that until I was meditating on this concept and thought, whoa. And that's why the French even have, you know, it's the worst of vices. And the German philosopher Kant wrote, ingratitude is the essence of vileness.
Hmm.
I mean, I had never heard people describing this in such stark terms like the French did in that proverb, like Kant. And maybe that's why the evil Russian dictator Joseph Stalin said this, gratitude is a sickness suffered by dogs. Gratitude is a sickness suffered by dogs. That points directly to Stalin's cold, ruthless heart. He saw gratitude as in that way. And that then is why Kant and others, you know, hey, ingratitude is the essence of vileness, wickedness. It's a vice. But hit a positive note here, Jonathan.
On a more positive note, gratefulness need not surface from big blessings. When Sarah and I first married, we had a used car. Because I was not a mechanic, there was always a sense of concern when taking a trip if the car would be reliable. Today, over 4 decades later, we can afford a better automobile. When we travel places, each of us gratefully expresses thanks that we have reliable transportation because we remember when we didn't.
Mm-hmm. And that's true. We do that all the time. I mean, we just drove to Ohio from Michigan because we had that parenting conference there. And we decided to drive. It's about 5 hours. And we got into our car, which is a newer car. And we both expressed that because we can remember. And I think I suddenly thought about that. Many of you can do this. This is how we begin to develop that. Remember how it used to feel when you had these anxieties or whatever, and now you have these blessings, then pause long enough not only to mouth thank you, but feel grateful in your heart. And somehow, I think, as a result of just pausing and meditating, let that gratefulness surface, and also the realization that it's not going to be permanent. It's a gift temporarily.
And then for somebody, let's say, in their early 20s, just starting out, where you were 40 years ago, what's the suggestion there, that, well, even when I was 11, I have more than I have more now when I'm 22.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're going to hit the intangibles next podcast, and so they can stay tuned to that. But exactly. I mean, if you're 20, you're not in junior high anymore, and the struggles that you went through with things. I mean, each of us can look at our present moment and be grateful for where we're at. I mean, Do we really want to return and go through again what we've gone through? I mean, we can always find something about, you know, to be positive about. I mean, I've joked about that woman who was so positive that someone said, if you could, you'd compliment the devil. She said, well, he is persistent. You know, and there is this perspective that people bring to situations that others just overlook. But I think to your point, yeah, the 20-year-old needs to reflect perhaps, what was it like when you were 13? And these are the ways of getting that perspective. And you do see 20-year-olds that are very mature. And why are they? For two reasons. They look back on their own life for the reasons you've just stated, or they look at the adults in their life and or they're even mom and dads and saying, you don't have to get so bent out of shape over this. There are some old souls who are, you know, 19 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Want me to read the last?
Well, nearly once a week. Yeah. And we're looking at little things. It doesn't have to be for, you know, the big tangible things. Nearly once a week. In fact, two nights ago, mom did it again. She's falling asleep. Once, when we try into bed, Sarah thanks the Lord for her bed. From her heart, she thanks the Lord for rest as she's falling. I mean, she'll do it. I can always say, oh, thank you, Jesus, for this bed. I just love this bed. She goes 100 miles an hour every day. She's the sanguine, you know, I call her PM, perpetual motion. And just 100 miles an hour, you know, your mother, that's just the way she is, morning and night. She's doing something. And when she hits the pillow, she's out like a light, and she enjoys her rest. In fact, she enjoys it so much that many times she's made mention of her desire. I just wish I could watch myself sleep so that I could enjoy it. And I thought, that's interesting. I don't know if anybody else has ever had that perspective, but she would like to watch herself enjoy the sleep so that she could enjoy it. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But grateful people give thanks for the basics. And that's the point we're making here. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. And mom certainly is one who returns to these basics, namely the bed. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to give thanks with a grateful heart, count your blessings one by one and keep that list in front of you. It's as simple as that. Some of you just need to make a list. So Jonathan, that last paragraph, if you would.
What if we do not have many tangible blessings? We must still guard against an ungrateful heart. We have heard the expression, beggars cannot be choosers. However, in today's American culture, that may be less true. Some refer to such beggars as charity muggers. As a pastor, I saw this firsthand. Sarah and Joy shared their experience several years back when seeing a woman on the street. They decided to buy her a freshly baked loaf of bread and bring the toasty warm loaf to her. When they offered it to her, she yelled at them, "I don't like that kind. Get me a different kind." She loathed them and their offer. She was a charity mugger. Ungratefulness is far more a condition of the heart than of circumstances. Rich and poor can be equally ungrateful.
Mm-hmm. It is so true. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. I mean, obviously, we know it's more difficult for a person in poverty. We're not trying to be unempathetic there. And please don't misunderstand those comments. But I am trying to point out that many people who have reached out like this have been stunned. And that we have to just remind ourselves, this is a condition of the heart. And it is something that all of us must realize. It's something within us. And the truth is, naked we came into this world, and naked we're going to leave. And there will come a point when we too are, so to speak, you know, in such a state where all that we have, all that we possess, we no longer can enjoy. It's irrelevant to our ill health. And we've got to understand at that point, our true spirit, our true self is going to come out. And, you know, we're going to perhaps have people around us, wow, he had everything. And look at the bitterness in this guy. It won't make sense. Why? Well, because we weren't really grateful. And it is a matter of recognizing that proclivity within the wealthy. It can also manifest itself in the charity mugger. And each of us must be honest with our own spirit and ask ourselves, you know, am I just a parrot going through life, mouthing thank you, thank you, thank you, but my heart is a million miles away. And on Thanksgiving, as we hold hands around the Thanksgiving table and we say thank you, where was our heart? Where was our mind when we did that? And it's this kind of thing that I want us to see as another opportunity to go deeper into this issue of gratefulness. And that is the key, in my opinion, to that ongoing happiness and joy, gratefulness.
And so the tease for next time as we go deeper with this ideal of gratefulness is what again? What will?
Well, what if I don't have a lot of tangibles? Well, we're going to find that the people who have a lot of tangibles realize that in the deepest sense, it's the intangibles. It's the things that money cannot buy. Mm. And what is involved in that? And can that really contribute to gratefulness, even if I'm just a living a dollar above poverty?
Mm-hmm. Well, most of you will be listening to this one day after Thanksgiving, and obviously those of you years from now as well, but we trust you had a wonderful day, and this is a wonderful reminder of what the difference is between just saying something like thanks and truly having a grateful heart. And we will wrap this up in part two next time. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week.
We're grateful.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect podcast. For more information and additional products, go to loveandrespect.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.